from the Sky News Centre at 6. Flights at Gatwick have been suspended again because of a new suspected drone sighting. Drones caused Gatwick to close for more than 30 hours until early this morning. Authorities have spent the day trying to clear the passenger backlog. Martin Brunt is there.
We don't know how long this temporary suspension is going to last, but it is the last thing that anybody here wanted. Specialist equipment brought in the last 24 hours that was designed to detect and track any drone that was spotted.
Four stowaways are trying to take control of a ship in the Thames estuary after threatening crew members. The container vessel has been circling for several hours. It's understood the group are migrants. Paul Kiprianu is from the Grimaldi Line, which owns the vessel.
They are armed with iron bars and they have been threatening the crew since this morning to get close to the, requesting the master to get close to the shore. The crew members, they are locked on the bridge. They are in direct contact also with the UK authorities.
A father of two has been sentenced to life after killing an escort on her 29th birthday. The 48-year-old will spend at least 19 years in prison. 270 people killed in the Lockerbie bombing have been remembered at a memorial service. Pan Am Flight 103 was blown up on this day 30 years ago. That's the latest. I'm Daisy Gray.
Do something amazing this Christmas and support Help Bristol's Homeless. This inspiring organisation have already made a massive difference in our city. And with your help, they can continue their work, turning metal containers into apartments for the most vulnerable in our community. They also provide targeted care, food and intervention packages. Visit helprestoreshomeless.co.uk online, click the link on the BCFM radio webpage or find them on Facebook to donate or get involved. Do something amazing this Christmas and help Bristol's homeless.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling, helping me review this week's news. It's Labour Councillor for Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, Don Alexander, and Lib Dem prospective parliamentary candidate for Bristol West, James Cox. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, 30 years after the Pan Am Flight 103 crash in Lockerbie. Which was pinned on the Libyans. More evidence though this week that critical evidence was fabricated after the crash by the CIA and introduced into the trial to mislead the jury. And the Palestinian ambassador to the UK, Hussam Zomlot. He visited Bristol this week and takes us through the plight of his people confined to what he says are enormous concentration camps put there by the immigrant Israeli government. In the face of overwhelming financial and military odds, his people struggle on. And Putin speaks to the Russian people. He applauds Trump's pullout from Afghanistan and Syria. But will Trump be allowed to do it this time? And Brexit. We bow out for the year as you've never heard it before. A stand-up comedy. A brilliant bit of biting satire, but I guarantee you won't be hearing this on the BBC. Perhaps it's because the BBC won't allow this sort of lampooning of the establishment that Britain's political discourse and journalism is in the state it is. 10 minutes of it for you at the end of tonight's last show of 2018. Maybe our last year in the European Union, or maybe not. We shall see on 29th of March next year. Plus Martin's chance to take us on a tour of the world's hotspots in the second hour after seven. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. I don't know what's happened to the weather forecast. Here it is. Tonight, lows of 10 Celsius and light rain. This weekend, highs of 11 Celsius sunny spells tomorrow and heavy showers on Sunday. Next week, highs of 11 Celsius, mainly cloudy with light winds over the Christmas holidays. Next weekend, the 29th and 30th of December, highs of around 9, mainly cloudy, and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. That's the week after next. Highs of 9 Celsius, again, mainly cloudy. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Pretty much rain-free apart from this Sunday. Lots of showers there. So helping us review this week's news is Labour councillor for Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, Dawn Alexander. Hi, Dawn. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi, Tony.
Take us through your political introduction and why you chose the Labour Party.
Right. I chose Labour Party. I represent the area that I pretty much live in and inhabit, and that's largely a working class area, and Labour is the party that represents working class people, and I believe it creates a stable society and a healthy society by investment and not being frightened of investing in people and in infrastructure.
The only trouble is, of course, the infrastructure around you, the docks, for example, at Avonmouth, has pretty much all become run by robots, and there's far, far less people actually employed down there than there were 60, 70 years ago. It'd be teeming, hundreds, probably thousands of people working on the docks. Now, just a handful of people pulling and pushing levers.
There are lots of jobs in Avonmouth. We've got the enterprise area, Seven Side enterprise area, but you're right, they're not the quality of jobs that we used to have.
So what the thing is that the dock work was pretty hard physical work, wasn't it? A lot of this work now is more like office work, or what sort of thing is it in people employed in down there now?
There's a lot of distribution centres for supermarkets, and yeah, we had the smelting works as well. So there was a lot of hard work, but there was also, it was well paid, and there was a lot of night shifts and stuff, so there was the opportunity to make a good living. I think that's a lot harder now to find the quality jobs down there.
What do you make of the changes then over the time that you've been there? You've probably seen quite a lot of difference in people's general quality of life, mainly due to lack of disposable income. And also, of course, the fact that nowadays, certainly for younger couples, both parents often have to go out to work almost all the time. Both parents have to go to work in order to pay the mortgage, to pay the rent, in order to make ends meet, don't they?
Yeah, there's a lack of disposable income. One of the big issues out there is connectivity, really. You know, your relationship to the city centre.
Hang on, you've got the train, haven't you?
You've got the train, which has had its issues, and you've got the buses, which continue to have their issues.
So what's the problems with both of those then? I mean, can you hop on a train and pretty much guarantee it's going to whisk you into Bristol at lightning speed?
The problems are that they're run by companies that got shareholders.
So how does that affect the service?
It means that passengers seem to come second to shareholders at the end of the day. There isn't the investment that's needed. We absolutely need more buses later in the evening. We need more buses at weekends.
So is the service that's there, is it reliable?
Not really. No. James Freeman says that the problems are to do with the traffic in the centre. That would be true a couple of...
Sorry, who is James Freeman?
Who is the CEO of First Bus. That would be true at certain times of the day, but I stood an hour in Lawrence Weston the other night and there was very little else on the road, including buses, actually. That was the problem. That's why we're standing there.
What would you like to see done with the service then? I mean, there's talk about getting the Metro Mayor Tim Bowles to introduce franchising. By the way, a few weeks ago we did discuss the buses on here. I've been constantly backwards and forwards to Tim Bowles' office. Initially I got contact and phone calls with various PR people and communications people at the Metro Mayor's office. Nothing for the last 2 weeks, and no replies to any of my emails or calls. So Tim Bowles, it doesn't seem, wants to sit in the seat that you're sitting now to talk about franchising.
I find him very elusive. We need more public...
I would even say evasive. Right, so I'm having a conversation, trying to book a date for him to come in here, and then everyone suddenly go cold. And I'm saying to him, well, I haven't heard from you for a week. What's happened? No reply.
Well, I would like to see him at the West of England Combined Authority scrutiny meetings, in the same way Martin Rees, the Mayor of Bristol, has to come regularly to scrutiny meetings and answer questions. I'd like to see Tim Bowles do that.
Does he actually answer questions? Is there any formal way in which he answers questions from people in Bristol or councillors here in Bristol?
Yes, you can go to one of the WECA meetings. Their website does show them. Not many people actually do. I wish they did.
I think I'm particularly irritated when people who have responsibility like Tim does just simply refuse to come on the radio to discuss these things, and because they are spending our money after all. And but the thing is, we have the same problem with Marvin Rees. He doesn't want to come on the radio here either. So what's going on there?
I can't speak for Marvin Rees.
And you can, but you can for Tim Bowles.
No, I can tell you he's not evident publicly as Marvin is. Marvin certainly is around at City Hall and in meetings.
Okay, so are there any issues you'd like to bring up, other things other than transport that are in your ward, Lawrence Weston and Avonmouth, things that people are coming to you with?
Housing is a big issue. We are really short of housing for people at the social housing end. If you've got a lot of money, there's some nice houses out there. But if you haven't, we've got a lot of people living in back rooms and with family and stuff like this who really need their own space.
We're also joined by Lib Dems prospective parliamentary candidate for Bristol West, James Cox. Hi, James. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
James, tell us about your background and why you decided the Lib Dems was the badge for you.
Sure. I'd always had this sort of an interest in current affairs and politics. And I, as I think most people do who have an interest in it, sort of you get a feel for the kind of person and the kind of society that you want to see. So for me, it was the idea of a liberal society, a society that is free, that is based on fairness, that's in the empowerment of the individual. And then, I looked at some of the big things that the Lib Dems stand for, whether it be on the European Union, whether it be on electoral and political reform, whether it be on social mobility and education, huge advocates for mental health reform. And I was hearing that a lot from the Liberal Democrats, wasn't hearing that a lot from the other parties. So it felt like a very natural fit to me.
So the thing is that the Lib Dems went along with the whole austerity programme, didn't they, in 2010?
Mm.
In fact, the austerity programme wouldn't have happened without the Lib Dems. And you're saying that, I joined the Lib Dems because they're into fairness. Now, this is really just about stripping away Social Security, really, from the people who need it. That is to say, the working poor, the unemployed, the disabled. I mean, surely that's just flies in the face of what you just told me about Lib Dems and fairness.
No, I think the sort of premise of your question is faulty. I mean, we don't know what would have happened had the Lib Dems decided not to go into coalition with the Conservatives. My own personal prediction was that there would have been a very quick general election in the autumn and the Tories would have been able to point to Labour and point to the Lib Dems and say, well, they're not fit to govern. And they would have gotten a majority and would have been able to do the stuff that we prevented them up until 2015 from being able to do. Things like the, I think it was £14 billion in welfare cuts that happened right after the 2015 general election, which we stopped them from doing in that period because it didn't just go into sort of the narrative of, okay, we've got to make sure that welfare isn't a lifestyle that people can, that it is social security, it is a safety net. But the Tories in 2015 with their ideological cuts completely went against that. I think had the Lib Dems not been in government for those 5 years, that unfortunately we would be in an even worse position than we are now.
And the cuts didn't start in 2015, though,
did they? No, they didn't start in 2015, but all of the parties, all of them said, we have to get the deficit under control. We have to bring rail back spending. Even Labour, you had Alistair Darling saying that they were going to have welfare cuts. It was going to cut more than Margaret Thatcher did, I think he said in 2010 before the election. So when Labour sort of turn around and say, oh, well, it would have been so much different, it wouldn't have been. It would have been just as deep cuts, and that was their platform both in 2010 and 2015.
Martin Summers, do you agree with James's scenario there for the 2010 election, that the Lib Dems didn't really have much choice, and what they did was to ameliorate some of the worst effects of what would have been a Tory government anyway?
I think it was a big political mistake by the Liberal Democrats, to be honest with you. We should have had a minority Tory government, and they should have, and then, of course, they wouldn't have been able to do very much because everybody else would have ganged up on them. And I don't think they would have won a snap general election. And I think, from the Liberal Democrats' own point of view, it was a very poor decision because it's actually led from having 50-some-odd MPs to having 8. You took the full brunt of the people's discontent with what happened.
The thing is, James, you've also seen a big reduction in Lib Dem councillors here in the city. I mean, it does look to me, as a casual observer, as if it was absolutely political suicide for Nick Clegg to go into coalition with the Conservatives in 2010.
Well, I think when you go from being the party of protest, the none-of-the-above party, to then saying, actually, we're going to stick our flag to the mast, this is what we stand for, these are the things we want to implement when we're in government, in power, that's a huge culture shock for most people. You know, if you look at the voters that we lost most of our votes to UKIP, not to any of the other parties, because we had been able to cultivate that. We're not the Labour and the Tories. So, yeah, it was, you know, politically probably not the best choice to make. But for the country, I don't agree that the Tories wouldn't have got a majority, but we'll never know. It's a complete sort of counterfactual way of looking at it. But for 5 years, we held them back as, I think, best the party of 50 MPs can, and implemented a lot of good Liberal reforms that are sadly now being picked away by the Conservative Party.
Well, one of you listeners sent us in a message. I actually do encourage people to do. If you've got an interesting local story that maybe is not in the Bristol Post or one of the mainstream press, do send it to me. And someone has done that this week with a story from they're called the Industrial Workers of the World. And this, I believe, is to do with the trade union Unison, who are backing somebody in Bristol City Council who they tried to sack. The headline is Bristol IWW Defending Whistleblowers and Free Speech in Bristol City Council. In March 2018, someone working in child protection for Bristol City Council was suspended from his post, charged with issues under the Code of Conduct. Most of the first set of allegations against him related to a closed Labour Party Facebook page. The group are made up of Labour activists who discuss policy and procedure. Was conversing with a union shop steward about the Walter Ailes anti-war artwork. This had been taken down, this is just over a year ago, after orders from Bristol City Council. But after an outcry, the council had to apologise. The artwork was replaced. The Facebook post had been given to the council by Mayor Marvin Rees. Therefore, rather than just speaking to the Labour Party member, Marvin tried to get them dismissed from their post in child protection. He also, by his actions, closed down the Labour Party Facebook group and shut down free speech concerning Bristol City Council's activities. Well, in November, Don, this year, this chap, who remains anonymous, has been, I don't know if you're familiar with the case, but has been reinstated. Well, anyway, he's been reinstated now. It sounds to me like this is a really bullying tactic, and you might want to explain why. The allegation here is that the mayor seen something on Facebook on a Labour Party page, and rather than go through the Labour Party to get somebody disciplined, he's actually decided to try and get them sacked from the council.
Well, that would be entirely out of character with him, and I'd be very surprised if he could manage to get a Labour Party Facebook page closed down either.
This sort of thing is becoming almost like, James, I'm asking this to now, freedom of speech seems to be being quite limited. I mean, this case of this picture by Walter Ailes, who's a former Bristol, I think he was Labour and Cooperative Party MP back around the time of the First World War. He was a conscientious objector of some sort, and he decided that the First World War was a complete waste of life. Anyway, eventually, the council decided to put this poster back. So it seems as if even the council itself has agreed that we don't know what he said on these Facebook pages about it, but has agreed basically with his case. So do you think we're living in this sort of the political correctness is going too far? Should council workers be able to say what they want?
Well, there's a lot of issues there to unpack. On the free speech. I think, I mean, I'm not familiar at all with the mural or anything in the Labour, unsurprisingly, in the Labour Party Facebook page. But I think as long...
The mural itself was actually down in the Bear Pit. It was part of an art exhibition. And I believe Mark Weston, the Conservative leader, was involved in the process of getting it removed. But then the council looked into it and then they put it back again. Because they thought, actually, this is just a historical record of what this Bristol MP said. It's, you know, yeah. There's no real reason that we can... even though it was criticising the First World War, saying it was a waste of life.
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's more than acceptable to criticise war and to say, actually, this whatever war it was, whether it be the First World War, whether it be the Iraq War, whether it be any war, to say that was a waste of life, to have that political opinion and to express it should absolutely be allowed, and it shouldn't be up to councils to try and police that, as long as there's nothing sort of inherently offensive in what is there. If it's just an anti-war mural, then absolutely they shouldn't have got rid of it. But on the political correctness argument, I don't believe political correctness is a thing. I think it's just it's something that if you ask somebody to sort of define it, they do struggle quite vociferously to put an actual definition on it. But I think if you can find offence in anything, and quite clearly that Bristol City Council took it away, put it back, I think they've seen the errors of their problems. And you know, what Marvin decides to do with internal Labour members is entirely up to Labour Party.
It's been fought apparently through some sort of tribunal. I'm not sure where, but certainly the union have backed him, and he's managed to keep his job. But Martin Summers, this sounds a bit like bullying to me. It's like what you can do. In fact, what they do in big business is they identify what they consider to be problem employees, in other words, employees that don't think right. In other words, they're not slavishly adherent to the policy of the company. And if they start to think outside the box, then they go into a box marked trouble. I've been in this box a few times myself, I can tell you. And in that box marked trouble, then once they're in that box, anything will be found to try and get rid of them.
Well, that may be, I mean, victimisation is something that goes on. You've experienced it, I've experienced it, it does certainly happen. I remember a few years ago, there was a 16-year-old girl who put on her Facebook page that she was bored in her job. You know, it was her profile, I'm bored with my job. And she got the sack for that, and the TUC at the time picked that up and said, that's not right. That's not right that a young person on a Facebook page saying, I'm bored with my job, is sacked on Monday morning. Because apparently she brought the... She was working for a solicitor's office or as a clerk or something. And she apparently brought her employers into disrepute and she was sacked. And the TUC said that's... You know, the TUC nationally picked that up and said, well, that's not right. And if young people should be members of trade unions to protect themselves from that sort of bullying.
Don...
Well, I mean, regarding this poster, I suggest the problem's more to do with the fact that Bristol Waste is responsible for cleaning up posters, and they're an arm's-length company. So with arm's-length company, as with any kind of private operation, you do get communication problems. One councillor can ring up and say, I'm not happy with this, could you remove it? And it's removed, and someone else is then offended by the removal of that. As regards human resources, HR within the council, we've got really robust procedures. If there's a tribunal of any kind, there's a cross-party group of councillors. I've sat on any number of disciplinary committees. It's really open and as good as you'll find anywhere, to be honest. We put a lot of work into it.
Well, it's quite interesting to see this. I didn't even know this website existed by the Industrial Workers of the World. They've got a special section devoted to Bristol. And it's
new one on me. I'll look it up as soon as I get home.
One post about every two or three months relating to our city. Anyway, I'll put a link up to that on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. And I think, what is Martin? Maybe I should ask you about this. What are the IWW?
The IWW were founded in the United States at the end of the 19th century, and they were originally founded by copper miners out in Nevada, but they had an anarchist philosophy. They used to believe in one big union. And there are quite a few anarchists. There's an anarchist subculture in Bristol. I mean, the pub over the road, there's plenty of anarchists drinking there. And they, you know, they identify with the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, or the Wobblies, as they were called.
So anarchist, what do you, you know, what?
Well, the anarchism was a political philosophy in the 19th century, and even today it still exists.
Wasn't it dreamt up by Russian aristocrats originally?
Well, no, you've got Kropotkin, Bakunin, and all of those people were the founders of it, but also Malatesta in Spain, and of course in the Spanish Civil War, the CNT was one of the biggest formations involved in the Spanish Civil War, and they were anarchists. And of course anarchism as a political philosophy continues to flourish. Of course it's got its contradictions, let's put it that way.
What are its contradictions?
Well, I know, for example, a guy who used to be a Unison official who was also a member of the IWW simultaneously. And the IWW don't even believe in negotiating with employers at all. Yeah? So in other words, there's a tension there between trade unionism, which is practical, if you like, and what you might call maximalist demands of anarchism.
So Don, you mentioned a Russian writer there.
Tolstoy, of course, was an anarchist, a well-known anarchist.
Yeah. So there's a whole tradition of it, and there's still plenty of people around who identify with aspects of it.
Are there any anarchists on the street of Paris at the weekends at the moment?
Well, there's probably a few. Yeah. Well, undoubtedly.
It may not just be Paris, it may be Bridgewater, because there's a little protest for the Yellow Jackets down in Bridgewater brewing up over the Christmas break. And the organiser of it is a guy called Jason Dowell, and I spoke to him earlier this week.
My name's Jason Dowell. I am currently run a business, North Somerset Tools, selling high-end tools into the automotive and engineering sector. Previously to that, I spent 23 years in the British Army. I left as a regimental sergeant major. And so you can pretty much say things have doubled in cost in 8 years. So if I give you an example of a tyre fitter, 8 years ago, perhaps they were on about £16,500, £17,500. Obviously, we'll assume that they progressed through hard work, and maybe they're a technician now, or whatever the case may be, and they can do oil changes, brakes, and so forth and so on. So they would have seen an increase in their pay, but it won't be in a high enough amount or a large enough quantity for them to be able to afford the speed that the cost product is to them. So, if I said a set of spanners 8 years ago was £100, it's double the price. They're still trying to, because of the amount they're paid, their fuel costs have gone up. Fuel was below £1 a litre 8 years ago. Childcare costs have gone up. Rent's gone up. Everything from a consumer point of view has increased in price. So they don't have the disposable income to keep up with the cost of product. And obviously I still have to pay my suppliers 30 days end of month. And they're not changing that, because ultimately they have to pay their suppliers, who are still demanding their payments 30 days end of month. Anyway, so what I've seen is the increase in cost of product and my pay go down. So I've just simply made the decision now. I've already had a successful military career. I've gained a pension from that. And I've just decided I'd rather just go get a job rather than fight to keep something going. We've seen a massive change in the way that we live. It's practically impossible now to purchase a house without two incomes, and certainly childcare costs and all these other things, they're through the roof. And so the only way they can be afforded is by people having two incomes. But I'm not even sure two incomes are actually working for people anymore. Mm. So my business is not dissimilar, I would say, than a lot of smaller retailers. We're literally, I would say, at the top of the iceberg. We can see it with bigger companies, Marks and Spencers and House of Fraser,
if you look at the figures of these big companies, they're teetering on the brink. Yeah. They're saying, well, actually, what we might do is we might have to pull out the high street and, I imagine, turn over those old shops into student accommodation or something like that.
Yeah, because it's partly because of people buying online now, but then equally, it's about having the disposable income to spend on these things. And I'm not just talking about people on really low incomes. This is starting to affect people on middle incomes as well. Everybody, I feel, is starting to feel the squeeze with these constant increases. And what's really driven me to act is that you're constantly seeing increases in things like council tax. So we're already looking at potentially another council tax increase again, and their expenses for the year 2015-16, obviously they're going to be 2 years behind because that's the way accounts are filed, their total expenses for the officers are £357,000 a year. So people need to start thinking, you're already being taxed £357,000 a year just so they can pay their expenses. And the top 10 people in the council, from the chief executive down to group managers, are taking in excess of £800,000 a year as well. So those two figures alone are over £1 million a year. If we look at the amount of money that they raise in revenue from housing,
Council tax?
No. This is amount of revenue that they make.
So this is rents from council houses?
From council houses, yeah, and so forth and so on. Again, I'm not an accountant by any means, but the figure here they're spending, so that this is money that they're actually spending out, is 13.5 million. But they're generating over 18,500. So they're actually gaining a surplus of over.
Are you talking million? You better say that again.
I'm talking about millions. Yeah,
right, well, you just said thousand there.
Sorry, no, it's thousands that we're talking about. But 13 million is what they're spending out, but they're raising over 18,500. So they have a budget surplus of over £3.5 million a year.
I mean, for you, you live in Mark, little village.
Yeah.
Tell us about the sort of services you're getting from these people.
So myself and my partner, we're paying over £2,000 a year in council tax.
Yeah, so what do you get for that?
I think we get our bins emptied. I don't think we get anything else other than that.
Hang on a minute. What about library street lighting?
There's no street lighting in Mark. We have no pavements. The local police officer probably disappeared a long time ago.
Do they fix the roads? Do they fix the roads up?
Yeah, we'll give them their fair due. They resurfaced the road a few years ago, but they've been digging up, putting broadband in lately, so we'll see how that survives the winter.
Well, I mean, North Somerset's quite known for its potholes, isn't it? And
yeah.
They're actually not maintaining roads. I seem to remember they don't really like putting white lines on the roads, so there have been crashes where people haven't even realised that the road is coming to an end because the white lines have not been replaced.
Yeah, that's definitely.
So we're certainly not getting value for money from these
people. I don't think we are. Again, I feel it's literally becoming robbery. They're moving the services that they do provide into the towns, so Burnham-on-Sea or Taunton, Weston-super-Mare, but all the outlying villages. What you're finding is that because they're reducing these services, the people who've lived in the villages for a long period of time get to a certain age where they literally have to sell their house for a bottom dollar to then allow themselves to move into the town, and then somebody comes in from outside the county and moves in. Again, it's just...
So they're having to move out of the villages because they simply aren't the care services.
Well, there's no services there. You can't, my partner's daughter, for example, can't get to Cheddar to see her friends where she goes to school at Kings of Wessex from Mark because there's no local bus. And the problem is that these councils are running these services.
Couldn't she cycle? Could she go on the bicycle?
Well, she could, but ultimately we all know the speed people drive around.
Yes, they're a bit too dangerous, those roads, aren't they?
Yeah, but... no, in all seriousness, these people in councils are starting to run these councils like a business. And a council shouldn't be a business. A council should be about providing services. It shouldn't be about budget cuts, constantly cutting services.
Well, they will say... I'm afraid they'll point the finger of blame at Westminster. They'll say, oh, this is all Westminster's fault.
Well, it's not true, though, is it? Because, again, if you read from their statement, they're saying that they need to cut another £380,000 from their budget for the year 2019. They cut £380,000 from the budget in 16-17. I can't find the figures for this year, but let's say it's the same. So again, that's another £1 million.
So they're cutting and cutting and cutting. They'll say the reason they're having to do that,
but they're running
is
a surplus.
Government.
They're running a surplus. Yeah. So they're although they will say if you interview them, they're being very efficient and running the council properly. recently, and that it's a multi-million pound budget, they have a £2.5 million deficit.
Okay, so this
is surplus at the moment.
So it's a little bit rich for them to then be paying themselves more and saying that they have to cut the services. What are you, Jason? What are you planning to do about this?
Okay, so, well, I'm not really a protester. I never have been a protester. As I've said before, my early life I spent in the army. That's not to say that, you know, things didn't upset me as a taxpayer, as every single soldier is as well. But I've now got to the point where I just don't believe these people anymore. I have no political home. I don't believe that either side of the political divide would do anything particularly different. Everyone's a taxpayer. Nobody has any choice about paying these taxes. It's not like we can find a cheaper refuse collection provider. You have to pay the people that the council are telling you have to pay. And yeah. So anyway, people have got to start getting upset about this. I mean, again, I've looked into some figures. On average, we're paying about £11,000 a year to the government. And that breaks down into £5,000 of indirect taxation. And that means that, you know, VAT and so forth and so on. But we're also paying another £6,000 in national insurance and income tax. And then on top of that, council tax again. We literally are being robbed, taxed to death. And people need to, like I say, to come out from behind their computers 30th of December, put a yellow vest on, come down to Bridgewater Docks, and then we'll actually take some direct action by blocking some roads off for a little bit, just to let people know that we are not going to put up with this anymore.
I mean, this is the sort of thing they're quite used to doing in France, isn't it? Blocking the farmers, for example. Surely, you know, around Bridgewater, this is something that people just don't do. They might moan about it down the local, but they're not going to actually come out and do anything, are they?
Actually, Bridgewater has been quite successful in direct action, in that when the milk prices were being forced down by
the supermarkets.
Yeah. The local farmers drove tractors into Bridgewater down the dual carriageway and blocked the road off until the people from Morrison's came out and negotiated with them. We have the largest construction project in Europe just outside Bridgewater, Hinkley Point. Millions of pounds are being spent daily by traffic filtering through there.
So what is your main thing you want to see change then?
I want to see a reduction in council tax, or I want to see them actually spend the money that they're taxing us for on the services that they say they're going to provide. Now, I'm a realist. There should be some money put back, okay? We all had the floods a few years ago, so it makes sense that the council is sensible and keeps some money back in the event that they do need to spend some. But constantly, like I say, cutting over £300,000 a year and seeing services cut for people, it's no longer acceptable. We can't see police numbers being cut. We can't have old people who are robbed at night time calling the police and then not having anybody turn up. You know, these people need to be made to feel safe in their homes. We need to know that if you dial 999 because your house is on fire, that you're not waiting for a retained firefighter to wake up, drive his car to the fire station, and then get into the fire engine, and then come along and fight the fire.
Okay,
we need these services there like they used to be.
Jason, yeah? How do people follow what you're doing online or elsewhere?
There is a Facebook page to follow. People can just search for that. The protest is on the 30th of December, 10 o'clock at Bridgewater Docks, and then we're encouraging people to wear yellow vests. Make their own banners, you know, come along and protest. I really want people to come out from behind their computers, stop complaining about it in the pubs or at work, in family groups. Come out. We're going to do something peaceful and support this.
So there is the wonderful, what's his name? Jason Dowell from Bridgewater. Actually, he's from the village of Mark. I noticed you saying making a few comments through that. Don Alexander, Labour councillor from Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, thinking perhaps he's got some of the figures a little bit confused there.
Yes, he referred to housing and their housing account having a surplus. There could be legal and accounting reasons for that, in that the housing account could actually have to be kept separate, completely separate from the general fund. I can't comment on their accounts, but that's the case in Bristol.
So we are not allowed to spend, if Bristol City Council makes a fortune out of council housing, it's not allowed to spend that on any services then?
In the unlikely event that we made a fortune out of our council houses, we couldn't spend it on roads.
Okay, so where does it go?
It goes back into repairs of council houses.
But surely that's on the downside of that account anyway. You know, that they've already looked at that, and if they're making a surplus, does all that surplus has to be ploughed back into repairing council houses that maybe don't need repairing, or building new ones maybe?
Well, we are building new ones, so there's plenty of scope for using any surplus money, but the rents we charge for council houses are, I couldn't give you the figures now, but they are really, really reasonable.
He's saying also that actually where he lives in Mark, pretty much the only service he's getting from the council is getting his bins emptied once a fortnight and that's it?
Well, I think people misunderstand what council tax is and their financial relationship with the council, with their local authority. It's not purely a transactional one. You're not just getting your potholes filled this year and your waste bins emptied. It's actually almost like an insurance, because you've got adult social care. So, for instance, if you get elderly or if you're infirmed in any way, that care could cost the local authority £1,000 a week. And that's all covered. Your council tax will not be increased if you...
What we're hearing is that adult social care is becoming more and more difficult to get. There are more and more hoops to jump through to get it.
I'm not sure that that's true in Bristol. I don't think so. We're trying to keep more people in their homes rather than put them in nursing homes and residential care. But I think there are very good reasons for doing that.
But what about his overall point, Don, is that essentially Labour, Conservative or anybody else, doesn't seem to matter who's in power, the disposable income is going down and down and down. He's now got to the point where he has to close his business. He simply can't make money anymore.
Absolutely right, because we're not taxing wealthy people enough.
Can we do that? Is that simple enough to do?
Oh, if you're in power in central government, it is. In local government, it's not possible at all, because this is one of the most centralised, possibly the most centralised developed economy, in the sense that we cannot determine how much council tax we raise, hardly. We have a plus or minus percent, but we can't change the valuation on the different houses. We can't make rich people pay more. We are very, very limited in what we can do, and we no longer get a grant from central government as of 2020. So really, our power to raise more money is negligible.
We're also joined by James Cox, who's the prospective parliamentary candidate for Bristol West. James, can you help us pick this apart? Why are people getting so annoyed, and why particularly is Jason down there in Mark near Bridgewater calling for people to come out on the streets? He's saying it's the time for typing things on your Facebook page or whatever is over. Let's get out on the streets in Bridgewater on the 30th of December.
I think it's a wider point that there is a lot of frustration that sort of the social contract that we all were told to buy into, that, you know, if you work hard, you play by the rules, you'll get your fair reward. You won't get overtaxed, but you'll pay enough to have a good NHS and good schools for everybody to go to. I think in the last few years, particularly post the recession, and especially with this Conservative government and Brexit on the way, that contract is very much breaking down. And the idea, and I think both the Labour Party and the Conservative Party haven't sort of recognised the frustration that is out there, that yes, we do want decent services, we want good services and easy access for people for those services, but also we do want to get on in life, we do want to do well for ourselves, do better than our parents, have a home, have, you know, be able to afford to have a family. And that's just not the case for a lot of people out there. So I get very frustrated. You know, I'm quite a young guy. And I worry about, well, will I ever be able to own a house? Will I ever be able to, you know, have the lifestyle that my parents had, or and do better than that?
So have,
and
you, I don't have, know, you got your yellow jacket at the ready?
Well, unfortunately, the sort of the symbol of the yellow jacket in, over the last weeks has been somewhat hijacked by the far right in this country. I would feel uncomfortable going along to anything that Tommy Robinson would endorse. But
has he got a yellow jacket now, has he?
Oh, they're all putting them on, standing outside Westminster. I was in Birmingham the other week where they were wearing yellow jackets with WTO deal on the back. Not really sure why, but... That was, people are, but, you know, symbols are an important thing. And I think we have seen in France, they've been bemoaning the high levels of taxation that are going on with Macron's domestic reforms on the carbon taxation. There's a lot of, whilst I agree with that.
I think I'll have to just remind you that what Don said is absolutely right about Macron. He said, well, I can change a few things. One thing I will not change is I will not implement taxes on the rich.
Well, obviously, I think we're in this situation now where, so the last budget that was just been passed, we saw the threshold for the higher rate of tax drop at a time where Theresa May's telling nurses to their faces that she can't afford to give them a pay rise and hasn't been able to for the last few years. So I think people are very much buying to that. Well, hang on, it is one thing for the rich and one thing for the rest of us. And I was very disappointed that Labour abstained on getting rid of that, because I thought it massively... I would have thought that would have been, you know, Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonald's, you know, their raison d'etre. But whilst... We do have in this country huge disparity in wealth. We can tax the rich more, but there's also the reality that, unlike you and me, if I get taxed more, I have to pay it. If they get taxed more, they can send it overseas. So it's closing those loopholes, working with our European partners to close those loopholes to make sure that they can't just send it to Jersey, they can't just send it to Monaco, that the tax stays here so that we can spend it on our domestic priorities.
Well, the other thing they do is they hire lawyers, don't they? And they hire accountants in order to find some way around paying the tax. And obviously, you and I are in a position to afford to do that. Martin Summers, what do you make of Jason's call to action? He's saying, look, I mean, I've been running this business for the last 5, 6, 7 years, making a reasonable amount of money since I left my job in the army. Now I just find it impossible to make a profit, and so I've had enough. I'm going out on the streets. And what he cannot bear is to see his local elected representatives increasing their own expenses by 30 something percent this year.
Well, I think he's expressing a general consensus that there is in the society that things aren't, the burdens are not fairly shared. I mean, it's quite obvious, as James has just pointed out, if we're still going to carry on cutting things like nurses' pay, there's no case whatsoever for reducing the top rate of tax.
What about what he said about business?
Whatever happened to we're all in this together with that Cameron fellow? Well, you remember him, the one in the shed?
What about this whole concept he's saying there that councils shouldn't be being run like a business? Well, what we've had here in Bristol is we've had the Mayor Marvin Rees bringing a whole new load of managers in, senior managers into Bristol City Council, some of whom have had more experience in business than they have in the public sector. Don't you think we were actually moving to become a business? The City Council is becoming a business. And should the job of the Mayor to be run an organisation that makes a profit out of the people of Bristol?
Well, I think Marvin would say that's a rather tendentious presentation of his position.
So why has he employed someone to make the council more business-like then?
I think there is a problem, which is that because of the most people don't realise that most funding for councils didn't come from council tax anyway. It used to come from central government grants. And what the Tories have been doing since they came to power, they've been basically fiddling the standard spending assessments to make sure that the Tory voting shires.
But isn't this really, sorry to interrupt you, but isn't this really down to 2008 and the bailouts? Because the government bailed out all these banks, and it's saying now we just don't have the borrowing capacity, the money to pay.
Well, that's
debt.
Right. I mean, people have got to recognise that it wasn't government spending that caused the Wall Street to crash. It was the derivatives market, which should probably never have been allowed to exist.
But this was Gordon
Buxley Brown, who was the head of the SEC in the US, said, "Well, we should have never allowed the derivatives market to develop." But once it did, and then it crashed. That's where the money's gone,
anyway,
and it's all in the Cayman Islands. That's our money.
We will be hearing from Steve Keen in the second hour, the economist, the author of Debunking Economics, and his view of what's going to happen with Brexit, what's going to happen economically with the Eurozone, Mario Draghi's announcement last week, stopping quantitative easing, no more money printing. Mm. On the same day, by the way, the European Central Bank announced that all the growth for the last 2 years in the Eurozone has been created through QE, and now he's decided he wants to stop it. So that probably means we're going to go into...
Well, that's the point I was going to make about your friend in Somerset. Lots of people are going to lose their businesses because there's going to be a recession and a crash. That's what's going
to
happen.
How to readjust the economy in order to actually allow people more disposable income?
Well, I'm afraid the things we should have done after 2008 we didn't do, and it's too late now. We're going to have the crash, and then we're going to have to work out what to do.
Around about 1.6 trillion, the national debt now. Can we not just write that debt off?
Well, countries will write the debt off in the first recession, the Depression of the 1930s, every single Latin American country wrote off all of its debts. That's what will happen. Turkey at some point may turn around and say, we're not paying our international debts. That may easily happen. That, of course, crashes the banking system, which means everybody's savings go down the drain. You know, there's no easy solutions.
I would say almost about time too, because this bubble has been being pumped up and pumped up ever since 2008. At some time, it's bound to go bang. Mm. I would suggest the sooner the better. Anyway, let's get to the real world now, and we'll be hearing more about economics with Steve Keen in the second hour. But let's go to Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday now, the last one of the year, and get a bit of reality.
Jonathan Reynolds! Yeah. Mr. Speaker, homelessness in the UK is now a national emergency and a national disgrace. Yes. Yeah. How can it be, in a country of our resources, our talents and our wealth, that this year 320,000 British people have been classed as being homeless? Don't listen to your ministers, Prime Minister. You only need to go to any British city centre this Christmas to see just how bad this problem has become since 2010. Whatever the government thinks it's doing, it's not enough. So, Prime Minister, please, will you try and do better next year?
To the Honourable Gentleman. First of all, I think in the way he put his question, he's confusing or putting together homelessness and rough sleeping. These are different issues, but nobody should have to sleep rough on the streets of this country. That is why we are taking action against it. But he raises the wider issue of homelessness. Why is it that we have this wider issue? It is because governments, year after year, fail to build enough homes in this country. We need to ensure we are building those homes. That's what this government is doing. That's what this government is doing. Last year, we saw the number of homes being built at the highest level for any but one of the last 31 years. And if he wants to ensure that there is a variety of housing available to people in this country, it is this government that has ensured that councils can borrow more to build more houses. And what did he and the Labour Party do? They voted against it.
Yep. Well, Bristol is building lots of houses, and that's one of the problems.
Can homeless people afford to buy houses?
No, they can't, but we're building a lot of council houses. The main problem is the cut in benefits. People's benefits have been cut to a level where they actually cannot afford to get into the private rented sector. And some of the most vulnerable people are falling out the bottom. And now we see this tragic situation of you walking around, as I do, in the centre of Bristol early in the morning on the way to work, and finding people in the most awful circumstances, and deaths as well, which is absolutely awful.
Well, I'm glad you brought the deaths up, because it was actually the Centre for Investigative Journalism that has managed to put the pressure onto the government to finally announce the number of deaths of homeless people. And we're talking here about the Bureau investigates, and I'll put links up to both of these stories, and I think it was on Tuesday or Monday, they announced their figure of over 500, and the government's official figures then came out on Wednesday, which was nearly 600 homeless people died last year, figures show. Homeless deaths have soared by 24% in the last 5 years. James, what do you make of this? It's like we've got human beings are just being discarded by our society.
Completely. And it's a completely unacceptable position that we as a country have forced people into. You know, you said the figure's almost 600, 61 of those were in Bristol alone. And you do see it when you walk around. You know, as I was today, I was in the Christmas markets walking about. And people in, you know, the most uncomfortable of weathers, and to the point where they are dying for a variety of reasons. I think about 45% of it is suicide, because they're in this situation. They can't see a way out. There's not enough support for them, whether it be pastorally with mental health services for homeless people, whether it be for end-of-life care. They're getting arrested by their local councils under the Vagrancy Act. It's a complete horror show out there on the streets, and we do have to be a lot more radical in the way that we deal with it. Building social homes is, of course, the first step. We need to see a lot more of those. I don't know how many are being built in Bristol. Maybe you can let me know.
An awful lot at the moment. We're just sort of...
Is there a number?
There is a number, but I couldn't give you it at the moment. But what it is, we're just turning the corner, really, starting to get them through planning, through the actual planning, literally planning on the computer, as they do, and then moving on to the legal stages. So you will actually see large numbers appearing in the next 2 or 3 years' time.
Okay, you want to just finish what you're saying?
Sure. I'm glad that councils are doing that. They need to be given much greater power to do that, to also repossess second homes that are being left dormant. They need to be given the powers to do that. I mean, it does bring out the best in some people. You know, if you look at the work that Help Bristol's Homeless has done, Jasper down in Knoll, physically building temporary accommodation for homeless folk out of old shipping containers. So there are, you know, a little bit of papering over the cracks, and it can save lives, but a lot more has to be done. And we're talking about tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of new social homes need to be built over the next few years to avoid more deaths on the streets.
Next, we're going to listen to PMQs talking about the homeless cold deaths before we hear from Martin Summers on this.
The ONS excess winter mortality figures show that in our country, over the past 10 years, 313,000 people have died because of the cold. 50,000 died last winter, the highest number of winter casualties since 1976. It is a shameful indictment on our ability as a country to protect our most elderly and vulnerable residents. So can I ask the Prime Minister to say specifically what she's going to be doing this winter to prevent thousands of people from dying needlessly?
There are many actions that the government is taking in relation to the wider issue that the Honourable Gentleman has raised about people saving lives over the winter, action that's being taken in the NHS and elsewhere. Of course, for people to be able to heat their homes and be able to have confidence that they can afford to heat their homes, it's important that we help those who find themselves stuck on tariffs that are not the right tariffs for them, that are higher than they should be. That's why our energy price cap is an important step in this. It will help 11 million households. On average, £76 a year will be saved, and for some, £130.
Well, we've got a privatised oligopoly running the energy supply, and the housing market basically is a racket run by the estate agents. And, of course, this is related to the electoral system, where poor people in inner cities, communities, don't really have a voice. It's the swing voters in suburbia who decide British elections. It's all wrong.
OK, finally, to Brexit.
Mr. Speaker, we should have had the vote a week ago. The Prime Minister denied Parliament the opportunity to have that vote, and she's still unclear as to when it will actually take place. Mr. Speaker, there are no meetings of the European Union Council scheduled until the 21st of March. And the EU has been very clear, there are no more negotiations, clarifications or meetings. She will be bringing back the same deal she pulled last week. It's an intolerable situation, and she's simply playing for time. And on Monday, And on Monday, in a response to a question from the Honourable Member for Belfast North on the backstop, she said, "I am seeking further political and legal assurances in relation to those issues, which can be achieved in a number of ways." The Prime Minister must clearly set out now how will she achieve these legally binding assurances before the House is due to return on the 7th of January.
We will set out what is achieved in our EU discussions when we return in the new year, when we have had those discussions, when we bring those assurances back. Just say to the Right Honourable Gentleman, he can get as angry as he likes about this issue, but it doesn't hide the fact that he has no Brexit plan. And I know it's Christmas. I know he's looked in his stocking down the chimney under the Christmas tree. He still hasn't found a Brexit plan. The Right Honourable Gentleman has to accept his responsibility for delivering on Brexit. And, you know, there are some people that say that the Leader of the Opposition just going through the motions. What we saw this week is he isn't even doing that.
Don Alexander, you're a Labour MP, there's your leader there, getting a bit of a pasting from the Prime Minister over Brexit. She's saying, well, at least I've got a plan. We're going to be voting on it in the new year. You haven't even got a plan.
We do have a plan. We want a general election.
Surely that's you're just trying to sort of score party political points. The result is the referendum. Theresa May's trying to implement it.
No, we don't want a referendum. The first referendum was very divisive. Another referendum now would be even more divisive. You can't separate the issue of our relationship to Europe out from all the other economic issues that we face as a country. We need to look at the whole package, and that requires a referendum. The division in the country between north, south, rural, urban is very, very genuine, and it is the job of political leadership to bring about consensus.
So is Labour going to vote for her deal in the new year?
I don't know. To a certain extent, you see tactics being worked out in Parliament.
James, what do you make of this?
I think we've just seen the crystal clear example of the complete fallacy that is Labour's Brexit plan. We just had Jeremy Corbyn there saying that there's going to be no meetings, no renegotiations, but his plan is to have a general election so that he can renegotiate the deal before Brexit Day, which is a complete contradiction in terms. Labour needs to, frankly, get real on the issue. Listen to its members, listen to its voters. They want a people's vote. They want to remain in the European Union.
Martin, what I really want to know is, are we going to have a German Christmas market next Christmas?
Well, the Germans may say it's their bat and it's their ball and not playing anymore. We'll have to see, won't we?
Do you think they'll impose it on us?
Well, I don't know. I quite like some of their beer, and the sausages are all right.
What do you think? Which way is it going to go next year? What do you think?
I think what will happen is there's no consensus for a no deal Brexit, so I think we're probably going to move towards a second referendum, because that's the only thing that anybody can agree on.
Time for the Murdoch News at 7. Thanks to our guest, Labour Councillor for Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston. That's Donald Alexander, and also prospective parliamentary candidate for Bristol West, James Cox, join us after the news.
Radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.